Welcome to Training for Manhood, an ongoing exploration and adventure intended to be fast, fun, and formative for guys who desire to be the best men they can. Young or old, there are always areas for improvement, growth, and maturity. We hope you'll pay attention and put into practice the useful advice you hear on this podcast. But remember, the goal isn't just to listen, but to do what you learn. Welcome to Training for Manhood.
All right, guys, welcome back to Training for Manhood. Got Dr. Stephen Lytle back with us. Sparrow House Counseling, right?
Sparrow House Counseling.
I love it. It's so good. Wanted to have a conversation with you about just what it means to be successful, right? The markers for a man, because you're in counseling, and so probably I won't summarize your job. You can tell me if I'm completely off, but probably you get a lot of guys who are struggling with something, right? So guys are coming in saying, "Hey, I've kind of hit a roadblock. Yeah. Life isn't going well." And so instead of dealing with every single one of those, which we could,
we could absolutely do that.
I thought maybe we could take the positive and kind of do a what are the markers, right, as a young man that I should be looking for, right? What are the steps of success that I should be having? Because then I can kind of look at the missteps, and I can kind of look at those and say, listen, if Dr. Lytle's not saying this is positive, it must be negative. So what are the positive aspects? That's what I want to talk to you about today, was just kind of help our guys think through how do I move in the right direction? And then maybe later we can kind of pick out those things that are really, taking you off the path and address each one of those specifically. But let's start with the positive. Where do we start?
So I think, let's start from the beginning. It all starts in boyhood. It all starts in childhood. Yep. And so I do work with a lot of couples in my practice. And when I'm working with husbands and wives, mothers and fathers, when they come into the practice and we're talking about parenting, in particular parenting young men, and I always tell moms that moms give this foundation of unconditional love.
Yeah.
Dads give a foundation, I believe in you. You've got what it takes.
Yeah.
And it takes both of those parts of the foundation for a boy to successfully launch from. Mm-hmm. In particular, with a father, when a boy knows that his dad believes in him, his dad is sowing into him, his dad is lifting him up, doesn't mean he's not going to get on him, doesn't mean he's not going to discipline him, but he believes in him.
Yeah.
A boy can launch from that.
Yeah. And there's a huge difference between discipline that suppresses, right? Like you're not good enough, and so I'm punishing you, I'm beating you, I'm putting you down. Right, shame-based.
Right.
As opposed to, here's the deal, when you misstep, right, the discipline is because I know you can do better.
Because I believe in you.
Because I believe in you.
And I want better for you.
Yes.
And I'm going to try to put you on this path.
Yeah.
Because the next stage of life is if you've ever read the book, Wild at Heart by John Eldridge, great book.
Yes.
I encourage every young man to read Wild at Heart. But John's follow-up book was called Fathered by God, and he goes through some of the stages of a young man's life.
Okay.
Stages of a man's life from boyhood all the way to death. And the next stage in John's life of development for young men is adolescence, what he calls the cowboy phase.
Yeah.
So during the cowboy phase, this is where you're out there, you're going out there, you're just experiencing life. You're young, you're cantankerous. You're not a lot of wisdom at this age, but a lot of energy.
Yes.
And what John said,
what you lack in wisdom, you more than make up
in energy.
In energy and enthusiasm.
So during this thing, you're just going out. You're bumping your head against the wall.
Sure.
But it's also during this phase where a young man starts to separate from underneath his parents. Mm. And in psychology, we have this term called called separation individuation.
Okay.
It's where you learn how to separate from underneath your parents to become your own individual because you're getting ready to launch at this phase.
Right.
And so young men during adolescence, they're going out and experimenting. They're learning how to drive. They're learning how to, go farther without their parents than with their parents. They stay over the night places sometimes.
Yeah. That's why their insurance rates are through the roof.
Trust me, we're going through that right now.
it's how much?
It's skyrocketing.
It's crazy.
Now, it gets cheaper when their brain fully develops.
Yes.
But during this phase is where you go out and you're just going out there trying to figure out, who am I?
Yeah.
Who am I separated from my parents and try to become your own individual, because you want to be able to launch. You want to be able to leave the nest, so to speak.
Yeah.
And during this phase, you're trying to figure all that out.
Yeah. I've always had fun talking to guys that age because the concept is if you want to launch to be successful, right? One, my thing is always like, who are you paying attention to?
Yeah.
Who are the people?
Are you
right. Who are you watching?
And
who are you listening to? Right. Who is pouring wisdom into you? And for a lot of young guys, I look at the people that they listen to, and I'm like, that's not a great model for you to be successful. You know, a person who might be successful in one area, but not successful in the areas that really are important to you. And so you have to be careful. It's like, well, you know, here's an athlete or an entertainer, right? But their life is miserable, but they're successful because they can put a ball in a hoop. And I'm like, okay, if that's what you're going to do with your life, right? And you want to go get better at that, that's one thing. But there's a lot of other areas of life that you've got to look at. And so, you know, I think as a young man, having an older mentor, right, to train you, to disciple you, to pour into you in the areas that really are important in life. So important.
So important.
Yeah.
Well, you want the mentor to be able to sow into you, and you want to look at who you spend time with.
Yep.
Because who you spend time with influences what you think and what you do.
Yeah.
And you know, the expression, if you're hanging out with turkeys, you're going to stay in the ground. And if you want to fly with the eagles, you got to hang around the eagles.
That's right.
So you look at who you're spending time with.
Yes.
And you know, it's just so important, because your group, the group of people that you spend time with through all phases of life, is extremely influential in your life.
Totally.
Now, I always try to tell parents that the most important social influence a child ever has are going to be their parents, because you're planting a lot of seeds.
Yeah.
But those seeds get nurtured over time by the people your child spends time with.
Mm-hmm.
And so going from adolescence, you know, into early adulthood, who are you choosing to surround yourself with?
Yep.
Because you're not going to rise above the people you're spending time with for the most part. You're going to do what they are doing. And so you want to have someone else who's sewing into you, trying to pull you up, saying, hey, look, let's look at this, or let's look at this. And that's where a mentor comes in and is so important.
Yeah. You know, in Scripture, Solomon's son, Rehoboam, took over the kingdom. And, you know, one of the things that he did was he basically, you know, the elders of Israel went to him and said, hey, listen, your dad's been tough on us. Now would be a great time to rest the land, right? And just appreciate, right, God's goodness, right? And Rehoboam, the problem with him was he was raised with a bunch of princes, a bunch of young guys, you know, living in the palace, right, having no responsibility, not working. We can kind of just, you know.
Not a lot of grit.
We can just theorize about what, right? And he went to them and asked them, hey, what's your advice? Because these old heads, right, are saying, you know, we need to kind of slack off a little bit.
Right.
And these young guys, right, his peers around him said, no, it should be just the opposite. And so he went and said, you know what, just the opposite. We're going to double down. We're going to, you know, you thought my dad was rough. Watch this. Mm-hmm. And it split the kingdom.
Yeah.
Right. Because of the lack of wisdom. And I think that's a really important thing from a young man's perspective. Right. Yeah. What you're saying is who's sowing into you? Who are you listening to? And I think the wisdom of finding somebody older, you're not always going to agree with them, and you need to ask yourself why.
Yeah.
Why would I not agree with somebody who's kind of been there, done that, right? And here's the wisdom and advice they have, as opposed to agreeing with my buddies, right? A bunch of other, you know, 20-year-olds who don't know anything. And I'm not saying that, you know, that they don't, but they only have the 20 years or 20
well, limited 25, life experience.
Exactly. So be careful of who you're paying attention to, listening, right? Find some other people to sow some wisdom into you. I think that's super important.
Who are the influences on your life?
Yep.
And when you're stepping, you know, of course it all starts, I think, well, it starts in particular with adolescence, because you're developing this individuation of thought, and you're trying to think for yourself.
Yeah.
Well, you're going to spend time with other people who are also trying to think for themselves. So, who are these people that are thinking for themselves that you're surrounding or that you're spending time with, and what is the wisdom that they have? And it is so helpful to have someone who's been there, who knows that, who it really believes in you. Isn't trying to hold you back, is actually trying to raise you. And this is where, you know, seeking that mentor is so important. Now, seeking a mentor during every stage of life is so important.
Yeah, agreed.
But in particular, during this cowboy phase, moving on to the next phase of life, which is called the warrior phase.
Okay.
John Eldridge calls the warrior phase, where you are...
Not surprised, by the way, if you've ever read any Eldridge.
It's that, definitely right,
that
Eldridge.
Everything has
Eldridge language
Eldridge
is coming
language.
Out.
Cowboy to warrior. I love it.
You move from this cowboy where there isn't a lot of wisdom, and you're hitting this separation individual where you're trying to find out who you are, to finally launching. This is where you usually leave the house.
Okay.
And this is, you know, early, you know, 18, 19, 17, 18, 19 is when you leave to go out on your own. this is where you go off to college, you go off to trade school, you go off to work.
Yeah.
And it's for the first time in your life the rules and accountability are going to be, more set by you.
Yeah.
You're the one that's going to be bringing that in. And so who else do you have in your life that's sewing into you that can help you with that?
So important. I just think you watch kids walk, and we spend a lot of time with young people as they walk onto college campuses.
Yeah.
And it's like, you got to make decisions before you get there,
yeah.
right? You got to figure out who you are before you get there, because the influence, right? I don't think a lot of young people understand when you're at home and your parents are basically kind of setting the boundaries, right. even though you're wanting to push back on those different things, like they're set for you.
Yes.
It's kind of the, what time am I going to bed, right? Things, even like church.
Yeah.
Right. Church for our kids, non-negotiable.
Yeah, we get up, we go.
Right. You walk onto a college campus and all of a sudden you're like, oh, like, do I have to get up and go? Right. I've got some freedom. And I think the concept is if you're not thinking through a lot of those decisions before you actually get there, and then you look around and it's like, what is everybody else doing? Yeah. Right. I think to me, maybe one of the worst decision-making processes that a young person can use is, what is everybody else doing?
Yeah.
Right? Because I don't think God created me to be like everybody else.
Yeah.
I think he created Dan and said, hey, here's the mission, here's the job I've got for you. Now, what do you need to do to be the best version, right, of the man that God created?
Yeah.
And if I start looking around at what everybody else is doing, right, in a way, it's like it's easy to shrink to that lowest common denominator. Right.
Oh,
there's a verse that I always use. It's Hebrews 12, and it talks about surrounding yourself, right, with a great cloud of witnesses.
Right.
And I always think it's like, instead of looking around at the other people your age, start asking yourself, what are the other great men and women, even through history? Right. What have they done? Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that I did was I kind of used a historical discipleship. Right. I read books from old dead people.
Yeah.
And then I found people who were kind of like me.
Yeah.
Right? Who are the Dan Panettis of the 1700s and the 1600s and the 1500s and the 1400s? And what did they do and where were they?
Yeah.
And can I tell you, at my age, right, especially when I was younger, some of the framers of America were, 13 when they went to college.
Yeah. It's amazing.
17 and 18, right, when they're actually, writing,
yeah.
right, the founding documents of our country. I mean, it's an amazing concept. One of the reasons that George Washington, right, was, placed in as president is because he was one of the old guys.
Yeah.
A lot of the other framers were younger, right?
Yeah.
Ben Franklin was an old guy, but these other guys were in their, 20s and 30s, which is why they set the, the age limit. Right? You want to be a congressman, 25. You want to be a senator, 30. You want to be a president, 35. And today we're thinking, 35 is so young. It's like, it wasn't back then.
It wasn't back then. When you bring up a good point, Dan, because we talk about during different stages of life. So in psychology, we know that a person's brain does not fully develop until your mid-20s.
Yeah.
And so, but there's a huge increase in growth and development during late teens, early 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for that is because you become your own individual. You have to think for yourself.
Yeah.
And so you're starting to problem solve for yourself. You're not being told what to do. You're having to figure things out. And it's so important during that time. If you want that part of your brain, it's called the prefrontal lobe. That's where executive functioning, higher order thinking comes
right.
from. Problem solving develops. It really takes off during late teens, early 20s, because you have to think for yourself. So you want that individualism. You don't want to just do what the group think is, what everyone else is doing.
Yep.
You want to realize that God says, no, you are fearfully and wonderfully made uniquely. You are your own person. Now go out and figure out, what I've called you to do. Well, I mean, seek the scripture, seek me to go figure out what you're called to do. But you want to know, during this stage of life, the reason this part of the brain develops so rapidly, because you're having to think for yourself.
Yeah.
And all those seeds that your parents planted,
all the blood flow is going to those synapses that are firing
like crazy.
Yeah.
And all the seeds that your parents planted, you start to look at and go, okay, well, maybe my parents weren't as stupid as I thought they were.
Yeah.
Because this stuff starts to really take root, and you start to see sprouts come up from the seeds that they planted, because you see it for yourself during this phase.
Yep.
Now, what you want to do is not surround yourself with people who are going to quash that. You want to surround yourself with people who are healthy, and you want other men sowing into your life, mentoring you. And this is where you do look at, not just necessarily one mentor, but who else are you seeking guidance and counsel from?
Yep.
And I highly encourage guys in their late teens, early 20s, seek guidance and counsel.
Yeah.
Where are you getting guidance and counsel from? Because you're developing your own form of thinking, but it's really helpful to have other people guide you along the way.
I, when I work with younger students, I try to kind of help stimulate some of that individual complex thinking. I actually give them a thing called perplexers. You can get it on Amazon, right? And it's just it gives you enough information that you have to begin to kind of like connect dots. Yeah. And I think that's one of the things that people don't do, right? It's kind of like, you know, 2 + 2 = 4, right? It's like that's great, right? Yeah. But like if you don't have all the information just kind of laid out there and it's not all linear, can you connect some dots? Can you make some not assumptions, right? But some calculated guesses. Can you put things together, right? And so I mean, it's funny, but like I hand out perplexers, right? These little books you can get on Amazon. And a lot of kids, right, really kind of like, wow, that's really interesting. I've never had to think that way before. Yeah. I've never had to, you know, deduce information and kind of go, okay, here's the information I have, but I'm missing a piece over here. Well, can you figure out what that missing piece is by looking at the other pieces, right? And putting that together. So and then I just think it helps you learn to become a thinker, right? As opposed to, you know, a follower. Like what is everybody else doing? It's like, well, maybe everybody else is wrong. Maybe everybody else doesn't have the information. Think through it. Now, if everybody else is right, you can move in that direction. But sometimes, right, in the groupthink mentality, they're not.
No, and that's where the groupthink takes place is everyone's thinking the same thing. They're fearful of thinking outside the box. They're fearful of thinking something different than their peers because they don't want to be seen less than or they don't want to be quashed. But it is so important during that, especially during this stage of life when you're starting to think for yourself. And this is where, you know, you start to look at the people you surround yourself with. You know, you go from, you know, your parents who kind of tell you what to think. Mm-hmm. Hey, you need to believe this. This is why we do this. To a group of people who, you know, their parents did the same thing. But then you start to look at, wait, really, what are my peers thinking?
Right.
And where does that come from? And what do I believe? Yeah. And where does that come from? Yeah. This is where a lot of times, you know, during this young stage of life is where kids start to own their own faith.
Yes.
Sometimes they pull away from the faith because they've, you know, well, this is what I believe, but really, why do I believe that? Yeah. Where does that come from? And many times it's, well, this is what my parents believe. This is what my peers believe to this stage of life. Now, what is it what I believe?
Yeah.
And this is where the danger can set in, especially in college, because you're not going to find a lot of, you know, even in some Bible colleges, you're going to find a lot of less conservative thinking, more liberal thinking, where it's just, well, you're called to think for yourself, but actually, you know, many colleges are kind of set up, well, but we really want you to believe this.
Right.
We really want you to think like this. Rather than really, really developing this critical thinking of, wait, what is it I believe?
Yeah.
You know, why did my parents tell me about this? They sowed these seeds into me and saying, well, this is in the Gospels. This is what the Gospel said. This is what I've always heard, so I've always believed it. But this is where they start to pull that apart and go, wait, really? But what do I believe?
Yeah. And I always tell, I believe that? I always tell young people, it's like you don't have to jettison, right, your parents' belief system to begin to kind of challenge it.
No,
right?
start to explore it.
Right, start to explore it and ask questions and just realize that maybe there's some wisdom, right, that your parents and grandparents and great-grandparents have had. Now, here's the thing. Just because, right, you've been brought up in a particular tradition or things like that doesn't mean that it's right, right? You've got to figure out where is truth and I've got to pursue truth. But I, you know, young people, when they well, you know, that's old, that's the way my parents thought. It's like, okay, here's the deal. You may be getting back to that, right, when you're about 30, 35 and you have kids of your own.
Amen.
So be careful about just pushing it all off, right, and spending kind of that 20s, right, sowing those wild oats and kind of going, oh my goodness, look at all the, you know, devastation that I leave behind. Yeah. It's like, no, pay attention, listen. Ask questions, right? But be careful about throwing things away, right, that you
don't
really want to
dismiss.
Hold on to. Exactly.
Well, and your parents have planted those seeds for good reasons, because they love you.
Yeah.
And look, that now's the time that you look at those seeds. You really start to examine them. You don't just push them aside, but you look at them. What is it what is it I believe and where does that come from? Why do I believe that? This is where you start to own your faith for yourself many times in life.
So what's that warrior phase? What are some of the other aspects of that phase?
This is where you're starting to figure out, you know, who I am and what has God called me to do. A friend of mine, Terry Moore, pastor over at Sojourn Church, wrote a great book called Love, Identity, and Purpose.
Oh.
Starts all with a love of God.
Yep.
You know, you are loved. And it's having that foundation of life. And then it's starting to figure out, well, who am I?
Yeah.
And during this late adolescence, you know, early adulthood, is you're really exploring identity.
Mm-hmm.
Who am I? What do I believe? Where do I come from? God, why did you make me the way that you made me?
That's right.
How did you make me? This is where you really start to explore that identity. And from that identity, you start to operate in purpose. Now, your identity is always in Christ, and from that you operate out in your purpose. We're all made differently.
Yep.
Okay, again, fearfully and wonderfully made.
Can I tell you, that's so important, though.
Oh, absolutely.
The statement you just said, we're all made differently, mm-hmm. right? All image bearers of God. Yeah. But here's the deal. Your purpose and my purpose are different. And so for you to fulfill your purpose, right, you and I have to be different.
Yes.
Right? I mean, it's just, right? So you're going to see things a little different. You're going to have some different skill sets. Yeah. You're going to have some different, yeah. right, things that are unique to you. Yeah. And here's the deal. If I want to be, right, Stephen Lytle, and I go, oh, that's really cool. He's so awesome, and he can sing, and he can do this, mm-hmm. and he's really, right. Here's the thing. That's awesome, right? Like, I think that's the hard part is like letting your friends be what God has created them to be and not feeling like I'm diminished because I'm not them. And it's absolutely. Just like, no, that, hey, that's Stephen Lytle's thing, right? Here's my thing. Exactly. Yeah. So you find that, you know, the guy, and it's funny how you kind of all, you know, congregate mm-hmm. together of, you know, hey, the athletes congregate together and the kids are engineers and the kids are, right? And then you start looking at it and, you know, you're competing against other people that are similar to you. And I'm just like, you know,
but they're not you.
Right. But they're not you. Yeah. So be careful of, you know, the guy over there who's, you know, the engineer. It's like, that's fantastic. He's going to be an engineer and he's going to, you know, create a car and do some different things and we're all going to appreciate it. But that's not me. Right. That's not how my brain works.
And how did God wire you?
Right. So how did God wire you?
How did God wire
right.
You?
Oh, I'm the musician. I'm the artist. I'm the this, I'm the that. It's like, fantastic. Cause we need one of you as well. Right. and one is not better than the other.
It's
just different.
This is where I love that Teddy Roosevelt. Quote that comparison is the thief
of joy. I know.
And it is because you're not supposed to compare yourself to someone who's not designed the way that you're designed. You were designed uniquely the way that you were designed by God to do what you're called to do.
He says your purpose is different than mine. Fearfully and wonderfully made.
Fearfully and wonderfully
So God has a plan and a purpose for you.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It's so
and
good.
So you're not a mistake. And what you're called to do, it may not be, you know, going into engineering. Even if you're, you know, hanging around with a bunch of engineers, that may not be your calling. Yeah. You can like that. You can have those similarities. And what else? Yeah. You know, what else has God put in you that he hasn't put into someone else?
Yeah.
And one of the hardest things for young, I think young men and you know, I'd say it old men, is finding out who am I? What am I called to do? Is really looking for our purpose.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you get into college. This is why, you know, kids change majors so many times. I think men in particular change majors like 3.5 to 4.3 times.
Oh, wow.
They're changing their college major because they're trying to figure out who I am and what am I called to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's where you seek, you know, I definitely pray about it, seek guidance and counsel, but also go, Lord, you know, all throughout Proverbs, Lord, give me wisdom.
Yes.
Lord, give me the wisdom and how you made me.
Well, that's why Proverbs is written to young men.
Oh, I love
right?
Proverbs.
It says, you know, son, right? Yeah. I mean, he just keeps on saying that. I can't remember who it was that said this, and people are going to freak out when I say it and don't give credit to who it was, but they said, you know, there's 2 days that are important in your life, the day you're born and the day you understand why.
Yeah.
Right,
so like, good.
Right, why did God create me? What am I supposed to be doing here? Right, during the time that I have, and I think that's a very valuable question as a young man, kind of owning that and wrestling with that. And who are the people that are speaking into you?
Yeah.
Right, that are and I love how you put because there are some people that can squash that.
Yeah.
There are some people that can press down on that as opposed to encouraging that.
Yes.
And you have to be very, very careful about people who are negative and divisive.
Yeah.
You have to be very careful about people who are always in competition with you because they don't want what's best for
that's
you.
That's not sharpening.
Right.
No, that's squashing.
And and there's a huge difference. I've noticed this women, right, and this is a show, you know, primarily for men. But I've noticed that women are very competitive against each other, right? And so, you know, I don't know why, but it seems like men can be more encouraging of one another. Yeah. That if, you know, if you succeed, it doesn't mean that I'm not.
That
both of us can succeed, right?
Absolutely.
You succeed at what you do, I succeed at what I do, and we can both encourage each other in that. And I think that's a mark of a great man. Right, is being able to help other people. It's one of the things that I loved about Abraham Lincoln. If you read about Lincoln, is he kept people around him that he disagreed with, but were really good at their job.
Yeah.
And so he wasn't fearful of saying, well, you know, I got to get rid of this guy because we don't see the world the same way. He's like, no, this guy's really good at his job. Right. I think it was his Secretary of State, right? Totally disagreed with him, but he's like, he's really good at his job. Yeah. And so he kept him in there. And then you get a different perspective, right? You've got a council around you that isn't an echo chamber.
Mature your thinking.
I think it does. Yes.
And that's where the sharpening comes from.
Yeah.
There's another term in psychology called differentiation. And basically to summarize it, it means that God made us all different.
Yeah.
You know, we're fearfully and wonderfully made. but we're different.
We're different.
And that's where the uniqueness comes from. And so you want people that have diversity of thought because it does sharpen you. It helps you look at what you think. You know, what is it I believe? You know, why do I believe that? Where does that come from?
Yep.
And so you want to have those people in your life. And part of finding your purpose is having other people that can challenge you. You want to be challenged. You want to be encouraged.
Yep.
And I think those two things, that challenging and encouragement, having a mentor who can do that for you is so, so impactful on a young man's life.
Yeah.
Someone who's not just going to lift you up and go along with everything you say, but encourages you and go, hey, look, I believe in you, but let me challenge you in this area. Really look at what you're thinking.
Yeah. It's actually one of the things that you do as your profession.
Every day, yeah.
Right? It's not just dealing with problems that you're having, right? But it's finding opportunities to challenge young men, right?
So the
whole idea of counseling,
yeah.
I mean, if you think about it, right, to give counsel, right, is to address things that you say, hey, I see something in your life that's not positive, but then to also call out the positive, right? And so I know a lot of men or a lot of traditions, it's like, you know, counseling's for the weak.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, counseling is for the wise who want to grow. You know what I mean?
It's a multitude of counselors there are safe.
Exactly.
You want to grow.
You want to grow.
You want people speaking into your life. You want people to challenge you, to look at what you're doing, what you're thinking, what you're saying.
Now, did the book go on, right, Fathered by God?
So it goes.
Is there further things beyond warrior?
He does. And I think Eldridge does a great phase. The next phase, which is going to be harder for guys to hear, he calls it the lover phase. But basically, this is about finding your passions.
It's such Eldridge language. I haven't read the book. I've read probably six books by Eldridge, but it's funny. I mean, I probably should have just given you the thought.
Yeah.
I bet you the next phase is the lover phase.
Well, this is where you go on. You're trying to find some passions in life. But in particular, this is where you tend to find a spouse.
Yeah.
You know, you start to look at, okay, I kind of have an idea of who I am.
Yep.
It doesn't mean that you have all the wisdom you're ever going to need or have.
Sure.
Trust me, that's a lifetime of development.
Yep.
But it's where you start to look for someone else to share life with.
Yeah.
And so you're starting to look at, I find some confidence in who I am. I feel like I'm kind of figuring out what it is that God has called me to do.
Yep.
Now, who do I want to go do this with?
Yeah.
And so this phase of life is really where you've kind of figured out. Your 20s is all about figuring out what you want to do. Your early 30s is – late 20s, early 30s is figuring out who do I want to do that with.
Yeah. You know, it's amazing. I see some people who, before they find out their identity mm-hmm. and their passion in life and who God has called them to be, they find somebody to do life with that really doesn't amplify that yet.
Yeah.
And that then becomes a relationship that isn't healthy.
Oh.
And you know, you've probably seen
this. There's dependency in that, right?
There's dependency, right? And so you find this, you know, this 20-something-year-old person mm-hmm. Who's found somebody that mm-hmm. they're attracted to.
Yeah.
But because they don't really have their identity set, they don't really have their mission and purpose set, they don't know if that person's going to help them on that journey or not.
Or not.
Right. And that's what I see is like, listen, as soon as you're solid in who you are, then when you look at other people, right, the physical attractiveness part isn't the most important thing.
You realize over time it's
right.
not.
It becomes a, how does that person help me become the best version of myself?
And who's then, my partner in
right,
this?
And then how do I help that person become the best version of themselves?
Absolutely.
Right? Do I see their purpose and their identity, and how do I fit in there to amplify that? And if you're not amplifying each other, right, and
that's
making each other better,
yeah, right.
50 years of just, oh, I'm attracted to them, it's like, that's not going to last
very
long. That's not enough.
Well, and you don't want to place your identity in who you date.
Yes.
You know, or who you choose to marry. That's not where your identity comes from.
Right.
Your identity only comes from God. Your purpose is going to come from God. You get to share, you know, your mate, your the person that you find, the woman that you find to spend the rest of your life with, that's your partner. But that's not your identity.
Yep.
And when you have a partner and not someone who just gives me my identity, you can encourage that person. That person can encourage you. You become a true team.
Yeah. That person can challenge you too. Right, because that person is calling out what's best in you, and I think that's one of the greatest things about my wife is right when she pushes back on some of the things. It's like, hey, right? It's not. I mean, she's by far my greatest cheerleader in terms of like you know, yes, you can do this, but she also is my greatest critic.
Oh, absolutely.
Right, of being able to say, hey, right, you need to do this, or you said this, or you know, we got to hold you accountable over here, and you know, she's the person I've apologized to the most.
Oh,
right,
the person who offends you the most. Without a doubt, is going to be your spouse.
Yes.
The person you offend the most is going to be your spouse because that person really sees you and you really see them.
That's right.
This is where forgiveness is one of the foundational
components
of marriage.
Well, 1 Corinthians 13, right? That love, right, keeps no record of wrongs.
Yeah.
You can't, right? You can't have a relationship where you really have that intimacy and that authenticity, and then you bring up all the things that you've done in the past that were hurtful and harmful. Yeah. You've got to learn to forgive,
you
have to. Love covers a multitude of sins. And just as Christ demonstrated, listen, when I forgive you, right, it's as moved as far away from the east as from the west.
You make a decision to forgive
them. Exactly. You've got
to
do that
seek forgiveness.
To the best of your ability, right? I don't do it perfectly like God does, but I do the best of my ability. I think I'm a great forgiver because I'm a really good forgetter.
Now, that's there's just a gift. There's a gift in that.
That's just because I forget things. It wasn't because I really work at it, but you know.
Well, you don't harbor those resentments, though.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, and that's such an important part of me. Probably 50% of my practice is couples counseling. I always tell couples, look, one of the foundational principles of marriage is just making a decision from day one to decide to ask for and decide to forgive each other
so
frequently.
True. So true.
Frequently.
Yep.
You just have to.
Yep.
Well, in that, you know, you were talking about, those two stages of life when you're born and when you – oh, I forgot the other
find
one.
Find the purpose.
Finding your purpose, what you're called to do. I always tell people the two most important decisions you're ever going to make is where you're going to spend eternity and who you're going to spend time with on earth, who you're going to marry.
Yep.
Those two decisions will impact you and affect you more than anything
else.
So
true.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's so true. All right, other than the lover phase, what's next?
So once you kind of matriculate through your 30s, you start to enter your 40s, and this is where Eldridge calls – it's called the king phase. You know what you're doing. You've been doing it for a while.
Yep.
Other people are seeking guidance and counsel, and this is usually your 40s through your 60s.
Yep.
This is the stage that you are in right now.
Yep.
And I'll tell you – married with four kids, I don't get called king very often if ever at my house, but I'm in this stage. I know this stage where I kind of know what I know my purpose.
Yeah.
I know what I'm doing. I've been doing it for a while. Other people seek guidance and counsel from me.
Yep.
But that doesn't mean I still don't stop seeking guidance and counsel.
Amen.
For the rest of your life, you want to seek that guidance and counsel.
Yeah.
And, you know, not just from others, but in particular from the Lord. I pray daily, Lord, bless me with wisdom. Show me what you want me to do. Show me who you want me to do that with.
Yeah.
You know, you never stop seeking that.
Well, I mean, what a great example, right, of saying the king phase, right?
Yeah.
Because when God made Solomon king and he said, ask for anything, it's amazing that Solomon asked for wisdom, right? How do I rule the people that you gave me, right? And so it's not now that you've arrived, now you know everything.
Yeah.
It's like, no, now that you're in this position and you get to, right, use the authority and the responsibility that God's given you, now more than, it's weird, but now more than ever, you need to have that wisdom that God's giving you, right? Because now your decisions don't just, remember in your
20s?
Right, in your 20s when you were running, you know, bumping your head against the wall.
My idiocracy only
And it did,
now
right?
It impacts others.
And now it impacts others, and it impacts your legacy, and it impacts, right, you know, your family and your children and your business and all those different things. And so it's like, I think, you know, that king phase is like, listen, now is the time you really need to have the wisdom, as opposed to, it was important before. It's almost like amplified.
It's amplified
because
now
of the effects of
well,
the
there's
people
others
that,
are dependent on you.
Yes.
You've got a responsibility to all these people, either people that are employed by you, your family, your spouse. And you're right. Your decisions impact others. They don't only impact you.
Yeah.
And I'm moving on to the last stage of his life. It's called the sage phase, which is usually 60s and beyond.
I love it.
And this is where you kind of give all the hard work over to young men. people come to you for guidance and counsel.
Okay.
But you don't stop seeking wisdom from others during this phase.
Yeah.
You don't stop seeking wisdom from others during this phase. But it's just harder to carry the load. This is the gray hair phase of life where that wisdom comes from. But you've kind of do this. You're winding it down before you go to glory. It doesn't mean you stop working.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot to be said for people in their 60s, 70s, 80s who are still going out and serving.
That's right.
But this is a very selfless stage of life.
Mm.
I think in particular the last two stages where you're going out there and serving others. It's not about me.
Yeah.
It is about serving others.
That's exactly the opposite message that sage age, that 60s.
Yeah.
That message that they get from our culture is now it's all about you.
Yeah.
And now it's your time, right? Yeah. For you to, go move to this little community.
Go retire.
Right? Go play shuffleboard.
Go do it for you. You've waited your whole life for
exactly.
This.
Now you've done all the work. Now it's time for somebody else to do the work. And I'm not there yet, but I'm like, that's not how I want to go out.
No.
Right? I'm like, I don't want to be now it's all about me phase. It's like, no, now that you have the wisdom And the experience, now is the time to really invest.
That's even more so
but
about
it's sad because we don't really tap into that older generation as much as we should.
Which is – and that is a – that's a westernized cultural mentality is we – you know, we buy into this. Well, now I retire. Now I'm going to make it about me and we're going to, you know, go off in the sunset and – no, this is where you really get an opportunity. You've got a lot of wisdom. You have a lifelong, lifelong experiences that have given you wisdom. Yeah. You know, crying out to the Lord, look at all this. Now go pass this on to others. And I always encourage young men, and I say young men, you know, I'm in my 50s now, but young men in their 30s in particular, continue to seek guidance and counsel, in particular those men that are in the king stage and the sage phase, that is going to help, or stage, that is going to help you so, so much.
Amen.
So, so much.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's interesting. I think we're the, you know, I won't say we're the first generation, right? But like where we are, you know, in America, in this Western culture, where we don't have multi-generational homes.
And
a lot, we don't have a lot of multi-generational churches even, you know? And so just that idea of like, where is your exposure to the different ages and to the older generation? And where is that older generation seeking to come back in and spending time with that younger right, of pouring into. And I think that so much wisdom is being lost right now. But I think if you're a man, right, it's like seek it. If you're a young man, seek it. Find that older man.
Yeah.
And if you're an older man, can I tell you, it's not all about you playing your 18, you know, holes of golf every single day. Give up some of that. Find some younger guys to pour into, invest into.
Who can you sow into?
Amen.
No, Dan, I think about this. I've been in this Bible study with a bunch of guys, you know, from different churches around this area. That, you know, we've been together 15, 16 years, and we have got guys in every, well, not every phase of life, but from 30s on up to 80s.
Yeah.
And there's such a collection
that's
of wisdom.
Rich.
And there's so
that's
much,
awesome.
Oh, it's so rare to have that. But it's been such a blessing in my life because I get to sow into others, and I've got guys sowing into me.
Yeah.
And I think that's why this Bible study's lasted for so long is because we've got a lot of young, we've got a lot of men that are speaking into each other's lives.
Yep.
And it's just, it's so, that's how life should be.
Yep.
How life should be.
Yep. Create it. Get it done. Man, I love it. Thank you so much for your time. Thanks for sharing the book, right? Fathered by God
by
Eldridge.
God,
and then
Eldridge.
What was the one your pastor had written?
Love, Identity, and Purpose by Terry Moore. Great. Cool. I encourage every young man to read both
love
of
it.
Those books.
Love it. Good stuff. And then Sparrow House
Counseling.
So guys, if you need some wisdom along the way, I know you're in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, but you probably can take calls and things like that from outside the area.
We work with people all over Texas.
Awesome. I love it. Appreciate your time.
It's always good seeing you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Training for Manhood. If you found the conversation to be valuable, make sure to rate us where you listen to podcasts. Also, check out additional content on our website, trainingformanhood.com. That's training4manhood.com. Until next time, in the words of King David, be strong and show yourself a man.